This is Jamie Dyer welcoming you to another edition of the Quocast. And today I'm talking about Quo from 1974, which is 50 years old this year. I'm joined by Andy Campbell to talk about it. Andy, what are your general thoughts on this album?
It's one of the best he did. It's one of my favourites. It's got a lot of both singles or records on there that bring back happy memories of 1974.
And did you buy it when it first came out?
Yeah, I got the vinyl copy of it, and then got the CD copy later in years when it came out on the CD. That's the one. That's the one, Jamie. Yeah.
Yeah, when you first saw this cover, because forgive me if I'm wrong, you were first a fan when they were doing the psychedelic stuff.
'68.
Do you remember what you thought when you first saw this cover?
Well, at the time, I mean, it was something special. I mean, Quo got into the heavy stuff, and it just reminded me of what Quo were, the look, the denim, the heaviness. It is one of my favourite covers of all the albums that they've done, because it's the band itself showing the band.
Definitely, with the artwork done by Dave Field as well. So the album opens with Backwater and Just Take Me, which is sort of a two-in-one situation, and it was a live favourite for many years. Did you ever see that live?
Yeah. Actually, I think they came to Stoke in 75 at Trentham Gardens. I was there at Thingy, and I'm sure they would have done that in 75 off the album.
Yeah. It's quite a strong start, isn't it, with Alan Lancaster on lead vocals?
Yeah, Alan was, I think, his voice was excellent, and it was typical Quo, and I think it suited Quo down to the ground. The roughness of his voice and the roughness in the song, it just went with the song.
Well, it certainly had it sort of really cut through the mix, didn't it? And
I mean, it made a change from having Francis singing and Rick, having Alan singing on that. It just showed off his versatility and that he could sing. And he was a good writer and all, so he wrote many songs. So, you know, along with the group, he did everything right. They all did it right at the time, I thought so anyway.
Well, Lancaster and Parfitt are listed as writers on most of the tracks on this album, bar a couple. And so do you think that made a difference to the sound, sort of made it heavier with their influence more prominent?
I would imagine so, Jamie, because Alan, as we all know, Alan was into heavy stuff. He liked the heavy stuff, the heavy rock, the 12-bar. He didn't like when he went to the pop version. So, yeah, I think this album was made for him and Rick. It showed there what they liked in the music, what they wanted in the music, the heaviness, the raw control of it.
And do you think that John Coughlan really kind of contributes that with this album, doesn't it? Because his drums are really prominent.
Definitely, without a shadow of doubt. I mean, you know yourself, a lot of Quo fans, they go back to the Frantic Four and say that's the best Quo. And it's the same thing in any life. The best is always the first. You can go on, but they never get it right compared to what the first four members did to the band. And it's, of course, Andy Bowen joined them just about the year after, didn't he? 75, 76. So he became a full member then. So, you know, that made the band. That was the band I know.
Well, he certainly contributed behind the scenes, becoming a full member, an official member in 1982 for the 1982 album. But there is piano on this, but it's Tom Parker doing the piano for Break the Rules. Break the Rules was released as a single prior to the album's release. Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought Break the Rules was a good single. But at the time, I mean, any single from Quo, from me, it didn't matter. I loved the singles. It wasn't a bad single in my eyes, being a Quo fan from 68. I just thought everything they did was fantastic. I was just mad about them, Jamie, and everything they did, they couldn't go wrong by me.
I guess what you're saying is, as they kind of evolved and worked their way through, you know, various stages, you kind of went along for the ride with them.
Yeah, most definitely. I couldn't wait. I mean, if I heard a new single on the radio or a new album on the radio, I had to go straight out and get it. It was no waiting. It was out and go get it straight away. Quo were just fantastic.
And certainly when compared to the rest of the album, Break the Rules is very sort of country influenced. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, but it didn't really bother me because I liked all the stuff they did and liked the heavy stuff. And I thought it was a bit different when they did something like that. And it showed their versatility of doing stuff outside of the box, if you like. Because we all know what Quo were like. We all love the Quo, but they could go and do things that were outside the box, and they didn't really care if the fans didn't like it or not. But most of the fans did, as we all know, because that was a golden year in the 70s for them. A lot of the hits in the 70s, a lot of album hits went to number one in that. So, yeah, it didn't really – I just loved everything they did. It didn't matter if it was country. It had their style on it. It had their sound on it.
Certainly. And there was a definite sort of evolution through each album as well. This album got to number two in the charts. Do you think it should have been number one?
Yeah, I would say every album they've done should be a number one. There's people who probably disagree with that, or go with albums that, like 1982, take that for instance. A lot of Quo fans didn't like it, but it went to number one.
Yeah.
So it goes to show you that at the time what can happen. But yeah, definitely this was one of the best that Quo did in the 70s, without a doubt.
Well, the next track that we can discuss a little bit is Drifting Away, which is another Alan Lancaster vocal. A lot of great solos in this one.
Yeah, it just shows, again, what they can do. And we get used to the solos, don't we? I mean, we don't hear a lot of solos from Alan on a lot of the records. So it was nice to see that he was getting a lot of attention on this album with the songs and that, and he was singing them to his high potential.
Definitely. He was a very strong vocalist. And the guitar work, especially by Francis Rossi on this particular track, you know, the guitar leads there, I mean, they're memorable, aren't they? They're hummable.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Quo's guitars and rhythms and solos, you know straight away. You can identify it straight. As soon as you hear it, you know who it is. You know who's playing, you know who's singing, and you know the riff, where it's coming from. Most definite, yeah.
Yeah, and so side two begins, and Don't Think It Matters starts, which is kind of similar to Drifting Away, I guess, but it's that sort of, it's back into the shuffle again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that raw sound again, that Don't Think It Matters at All, and it just goes in your head. You can't get it out of your head because of the words, the way it's going, the shuffle and everything. It's another fantastic song.
That's the one
I'm
where
I'm singing it all the time.
That's the one where it goes into a solo and you hear, I think it's Alan Lancaster kind of call out, you know, as though they're having a great time.
Well, I think in that period of time, the band was together, weren't they? I mean, they were all one, if you like, wanted the same thing. We're all getting along. It was only later in life that things started to go thingy. So, yeah, I mean, this album purely shows how tight they were when they got together and did it and recorded it. Because there isn't a bad sound on it at all if you listen to it. Not, you can tell it, they're very tight, all of them, as they like to be.
Well, I know it was the case with Hello, where they sort of recorded it in a circle, and I wonder, given the raw sound of this one, whether they did a similar thing.
Well, that's a good question to ask one of the band, but if you ever get time, Jamie, I think if we look at, like I said, from Pile Driver, Quo, Hello, and Blue For You, they all had that really good combined togetherness. All the albums, all the songs, you knew what they were doing. You knew the sound was there. Everything was perfect on it.
Yes, definitely. Fine, Fine, Fine is the next one we can discuss here. It's a Rossi Young composition. A little more country, but some great again, solos in that one.
Yeah, I love the solos. I mean, I love Francis when he gets into his little solo riffs and shows his how good he is at playing the guitar. And I always think Francis is underestimated as a guitarist, even now. I thought him and Rick, we all know, was a great rhythm guitarist, probably one of the best. And that shows that Fine, Fine, Fine shows that off without a shadow of a doubt.
Definitely. Let's move on to Lonely Man, which is a bit of a change of pace. It's one of the slower songs, isn't it? It's in sort of the vein of early ones from Pile Driver, like All the Reasons and such. Like it's one of those slower ones, but it builds into something quite epic.
Yeah, I mean, the end really gets going, but I think that Quo are underestimated when they do slow-moving songs. I think they can really adapt and make them work, and they don't seem out of character for me, for Quo, doing a slow song. And there's even other songs now that they do, and I think, well, they've done a fantastic job on that. And that's how they are. That's what they can do. They can turn a song that may not be a Quo song or people resolve that they're a Quo song, and they make it work for them. And I think that's fantastic. I think that's one of the things they do really well.
Well, at this point, Rick had quite a smoothness to his voice that is evident on the earlier albums. And certainly he was brought in initially as a singer, and certainly with this track you can see why, because he's able to hit those notes in such a smooth and interesting way.
Yeah, I think Rick was underestimated, wasn't he? I mean, I don't think people thought that he could sing, but he's proved that he can and he can play, so there's no doubt about it that all fans will regard Rick as one of the best, or the best, without a shadow of a doubt, in what he was doing, singing and playing.
Do you think that this song gives the whole album kind of a bit of shade? Because we have sort of a lot of very heavy tracks, and then this one is just slightly lighter. Do you think it gives it that sort of airiness, shadiness?
Yeah, it gives that, and it gives a balance and all, because everybody looks to having that raw, heavy 12-bar blues, and then we get this slow, metallic sound and tune, and it works great. It works fantastic. It goes with the album. I don't think the album would be the same if that tune wasn't on the album. It made the album and all, as long as all the others.
Definitely. It's definitely a listening experience. I found that there's a lot of, as you say, balance in the track selection. So we go on to the final track, which is another Rossi Young composition, Slow Train, which it says on my record here, it's 7 minutes and 55 seconds. It's quite an epic, isn't it? There's a lot of different things going on there.
Yeah, I mean, the guitars and it are, they've got it out to perfection, how they get the solos, the rhythms, both playing different parts of the record in their own type, if you like, because we know it how it goes. And Rick and Francis seem to work really well on this. And it's one of the best songs on any album, Slow Train. It really gets you going, because it starts off and then it builds and builds and builds until you get into the final bit where it's really moving.
It sort of starts off as like a sort of a typical Quo song, and then it surprises you and it goes off into like country, and then like a marching band where John Coughlin's sort of military background really comes into place.
The drum. Yeah, John's drumming on that, yeah, because he does his solo in it, doesn't he? Then they come back into the two guitars at the end of the solo, pitching back into the rift, if you like. They're so good at doing the most of the riffs. We know that they're quo. You can tell automatically when you're that riff, it's a quo riff, and that's what we all love and like about it.
Do you remember sort of, I mean, at that point, the long song had sort of been established because you'd had like Roadhouse Blues and you'd had 4,500 times. When you first heard this, like, do you remember what your thoughts were? Were you surprised by it?
Well, it's going back a long time, but I don't think I was, Jamie, because with loving quo so much, anything they did, for me, it could go on for 10 minutes. They could keep on going. It's just the sound they made and the love for quo that I couldn't care less. I could go on for 20 minutes for me and I could just sit there and listen to it and keep on playing it over and over again.
Are you disappointed they didn't play it live in full? I mean, I know it was used on a medley, but it would have been an interesting live track, if not a little tricky.
It would, but we all know what Francis thinks about you can't get every track or every record when they're doing a concert. And they pick to play to the audience. But I think the audiences would have loved him doing the full set of Slow Train. I think that would have gone down a bomb, no doubt about that.
Well, it might have changed a few perceptions, I think, because there are some kind of different for quo stuff in there.
Yeah. I don't really say about that because, like I said, it doesn't matter what quo did to me. I could listen to it forever. And I've only got one perception of quo, and that's quo. That's it.
Yeah. So when you look at the album as a whole, when you look at the Quo album, do you think it kind of rests among like some of the best of their material?
I would put it in my top five, definitely. Quo albums. Yeah, definitely. Because it's got some great, great songs on it. The songs that many Quo fans, I like to hear when they get into the riffs and along the guitar solos and everything, the drumming, heavy drumming and bass and that's what I like to hear from Quo, yeah. So it'd be my top five, definitely.
Well, we know as listeners, as viewers, that you are an ardent collector of Status Quo stuff. Have you picked up anything recently?
Yeah, I've all the latest stuff that's been released. I've had two of them. And I've got the rest of it coming this month, the end of the month, the two vinyls that they're just releasing. And I've picked a few things off other websites, shall we say, that I haven't got. I'm still collecting all the time, Jamie, and I've got a long way to go to get my collection up to something because I was watching the end of the tour where they did the four gigs in one day. There was a guy on there and he got something like, I think it was 300 albums and 300 odd singles. So obviously he's been collecting all over the world. So I've got a long way to go to match that collection. But I'll keep on trying. I'll keep on collecting, being the Quo fan I am.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Andy, for being a guest on the podcast today.
No problem, Jamie. Thanks for having me on.